Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of High Resolution, Bite-Size Video Game Industry Podcast. This episode, we're doing something a little bit different. Because we've passed the halfway point of the year, we thought it'd be a good idea to reflect on what games have come out and what games are early contenders for Game of the Year. And having recently published a mid-year Game of the Year list, the fine folks at Games Hub, I thought I'd ask them along to discuss their picks and why they've chosen them and what we're looking forward to for the rest of the year. So I'm joined by Edmund Tran, editor of Games Hub. Thank you for joining me.
No worries, Chris. How you going?
Yeah, I'm going really well. Really happy to have you here. And I'm joined by Emily Spindler, Games Hub contributor and someone who's written some absolutely ripping features lately. So thank you very much for joining me, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
An absolute pleasure. So we'll get started. In terms of games of the year, there have been some very big games that have come out. One that I have consistently heard from a lot of people at the top of their list so far. Ed, this is one that you've been seeing the praises of, Elden Ring. Talk me through Elden Ring and why it's one of your games of the year so far.
Yeah, Elden Ring. This is going to be a hot contender for a lot of the top of many, many lists, I think. Mm. So if you're not aware, Elden Ring is the latest game from a company called From Software, who made a series called Dark Souls, and their signature game design involves, like very little handholding, very difficult challenges, and, a lot of sort of, yeah, just player, driven discovery of whatever was going on. So they're typically known for being very punishing, and you know, lots of people have sort of stayed away from those games in the past. But Elden Ring changes things up by, I guess, making it more somewhat more accessible in a couple of ways, by making it a big open world game. So you're not forced down one path. You can sort of explore a little bit more. And if you do run across something that's way above your head in terms of challenge, you can go elsewhere and sort of practice before you do that. There are a lot of little mechanical things, like, you know, lots of little assistant tools, like, you know, you can summon animals to sort of help you and stuff, kind of stuff. But I think possibly the thing that's gotten it most, the reason why it's so popular is the association of George R.R. Martin. And I know that's not a big deal for me at all, because I've never read Game of Thrones or whatever, but that having his name on the cover is definitely shipping units, because this thing has sold it was something like 12 million units in the course of like 3 weeks. So this previously, very niche, difficult, type of game has gotten, a wide reach. People have sort of, discovered the joys of beating your head up against a wall and sort of overcoming challenge. And that's great, you know, and this is many people's first Dark Souls style game. And I've seen so many people on my social media accounts finish it. Like, this is like the first Souls game that they've ever played and finished, which is like a really great testament to sort of what Elden Ring does in sort of building its world and, guiding you through its challenges and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. Give it a shot if you've never played a Souls game before. You might like it.
Or even in my case, if you've played most of them but have not finished any of them,
perhaps this is a good one for me to jump in and finally commit to seeing it all the way through. Where would you sort of rank or place it among the From Software games that you've played, Ed?
Look, it's definitely up there. It definitely comes from the Dark Souls sort of lineage. So in terms of Dark Souls games, I'd say this is one of my favorites for sure, just because of how awe-inspiring the world is. Like, basically every turn of your coin, every corner you turn, it seems like there's something spectacular waiting for you or something horrifying waiting for you. And there's lots of those wow moments, which, sort of were, I guess, they seem more prevalent just because there are so many options. And so, yeah, it's definitely my favorite in terms of those ones. But obviously, From Software has done stuff like Sekiro and Bloodborne, which provide a few twists on the formula, which are also really great. I quite like Sekiro myself. But, no, Elden Ring is definitely up there. Well, it's one of the best From Software games. Yeah, and I think that'll come out in sort of end-of-year lists for sure.
Fantastic. And yeah, you're absolutely right, considering just looking at the sheer number of units that have shipped so far, it's something that has widely resonated with people across the world. So yeah, would not surprise me to see that top many game of the year lists at the end of the year. But another very big game, this one's more of a platform specific one, and this one, Horizon Forbidden West. And I know this was one that Leah, who unfortunately couldn't join us, another one of the lovely Games Hub team members, Leah put this as one of her game of the years so far. But Emily, I also know this is something that you've really been enjoying as well. So please talk me through your experience with Horizon Forbidden West and why you think this might be a game of the year contender.
Yeah, so Horizon Forbidden West was the first game that I got to play on my PS5. So I guess there was that huge jump in just the performance of the game, the visuals, all that kind of stuff, which really wowed me just off the bat. But I'm an absolute tragic for, I guess, those kind of huge expansive stories where you're just playing single player, exploring these amazing worlds, all these interconnected communities. So it was always going to be a top contender in my book. I was a huge fan of Horizon Zero Dawn. I love Aloy's story. And they've really turned it up a notch in this one, I feel. So obviously beyond the absolutely stunning visuals, which are just, I cannot state enough that they're amazing. But beyond that, just the amount of different gigantic robotic dinosaur-like creatures that you can combat, you can overturn and kind of ride on, use, all that kind of stuff. It's just, yeah, it's really kind of taking what they did well in the last game and just making it even better, making it newer, refreshing the combat. So I guess on that front, yeah, it's been absolutely fantastic. I haven't completed it yet, but I am pretty decently through it so far. And I think, yeah, they've taken a formula that worked really well for Zero Dawn and they've just managed to refine it a bit more, which is something I really love to see. You know, a lot of sequels kind of take what they've done and they may not change it at all, but Guerrilla Games has managed to, I guess, take what wasn't working from Zero Dawn and just do it a little bit better. So I've been really enjoying it and I know it's already been getting a lot of love. I know it's already won a award from, I believe, the Developer Star Awards for Game of the Year, which is really, really great. And I'm glad it's getting the accolades that it deserves. But it'll be interesting to see how it fares later in the year against the releases that are coming at the back end of this year.
Certainly. And yeah, that is a pretty big deal to have it as your first sort of next gen or what really is current gen console as well. You being one of the lucky ones who has a PS5. So let's, you know, rub that in the face of everyone who hasn't got one yet. But, one of the things I liked that someone pointed out for Horizon Forbidden West, I think this might have been in a Digital Foundry breakdown of some of the technical stuff that it does really well, is the way that it frames conversations between characters, and the characters all appear through better animations, better camera techniques, and that sort of thing. All the characters look more lifelike, or less like an NPC,
yeah,
and more like an actual person who you're you know, reacting with, conversing with, and sort of gives a little bit more grounding to their story and a lot of the side missions and the main quest as well. I'm curious, with you mentioned some of the things that perhaps the first Horizon game didn't do quite as well. Is there something that sticks out to you, Emily, with Horizon Forbidden West as a really remarkable improvement from the original?
I think absolutely you've touched on it, the kind of NPCs and how the world feels like it's living and breathing. I personally found Zero Dawn could get quite lonely at times, but in Forbidden West, they really built up those amazing civilizations and encampments that you come across. And as part of that living, breathing world, you might save someone from an attack earlier in the game, and then you end up at their encampment later in the game, and they thank you, and they might gift you something. You get rewarded in that way. And so I think just having a game where it feels like, you know, the world is changing around you and you are of consequence to even tiny, minute things is definitely a huge improvement. And it feels a lot less like you're kind of going on this road alone, because they've got that amazing cast of characters and the voice actors gave great performances as well, which I think really adds some depth to that. So I'm probably going to stick with that as the kind of biggest improvement in my mind.
Yeah, there are also certainly a lot of leaves.
Yes.
That was my first reaction. It was like, there is just so much foliage. It's almost overwhelming, and it's just insane how much we can render now.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic, just the amount of work that's been put into it. I think my one piece of feedback on it, and it's so petty, but Aloy's hair, just something about it isn't quite right. I think if that was fixed, I could almost call it a perfect game, but...
That's fair. I mean, that's, you know, you are absolutely valid. You're allowed to have your specific hang-ups. We don't judge here. I did actually find on the hair side of things with Horizon, because one of the big things when I jumped in was, especially with the PS5 allowing more graphical and performance options, is trying to figure out, oh, do I want to play on 30 frames, higher quality graphics, or 60 frames, smoother gameplay? And I found that, I can't remember which one because it's a while since I've played, but there was one where I found the hair just looked a bit wrong and a bit distracting. And so I totally agree that it is a valid thing to mention, because I based my graphical and performance settings based on what made the characters look better. So there you go.
I'm glad you're with me on that.
Yes. So there's another game that I'm very keen to ask about, Ed. Vampire Survivors. This is a game that I've seen some images, some stills, and some video footage on social media for, and I've heard a lot of really good things about, but sort of from the outside looking in, it looks like a real mess of pixels. There's a lot of things going on.
Yeah, it looks like hot trash when you take a look at it in social media, like stills, in even video. Like, it's just, but it's something about the gameplay loop of this game. So what it is, it's basically a game that is aping off the themes of Castlevania, and specifically with, you know, just killing Castlevania style enemies. So it's part idle game, part, no, it's basically an idle game with a little bit of movement. So you start with a character, you sort of move it around this field where, enemies are just constantly coming at you in sort of a Dynasty Warriors style thing. And your character is, automatically firing whatever their weapon is. And as you level up and get experience, you get to stack on more weapons on your character. And it's just that weird satisfaction of, slowly growing your loadout and just like, constantly seeing this gradual power curve and being able to just take out hundreds and hundreds of monsters at once. So it's that innate satisfaction that I think has gotten this game such a rabid cult fan base. Like, it only came out in early access this year, and I think it's going to launch completely by the end of the year, but it's just oddly satisfying. And I realize it just looks bad. It sounds very standard on paper, but once you actually get your hands on it and you sink like 5 minutes into it, you'll be hooked, because all you'll want is that feeling of being able to eliminate
so many enemies on screen with, you know, your ridiculous little person. And all you're literally doing is like moving them around and sort of making sure you're having enough space to sort of have your abilities to cool down and fire off. I'd say that if you are curious about it, definitely give it a shot, because I think it's only like $3 or $4 on Steam, and you'll very quickly see what everyone is talking about. It is just insane how big this game has gotten, I think. And I think it's definitely, I think that's definitely warranted.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I think of the idle genre, I tend to think of a lot of mobile games that enact some quite aggressive microtransaction and monetization elements. So do you think the fact that Vampire Survivors is like an upfront premium game, you know, you're dropping a few dollars on this, sort of remove some of the gross elements that other idle games implement, or is it something that's more baked into its core gameplay? How would you say it really differentiates itself from other idle or sort of idle based games?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had too much experience with monetized idle games, and I've played things like Cookie Clicker and sort of Universal Paperclips, those kind of things. And I guess the one hook here is that you do need to keep your eye on your characters. There's just that tiny little bit of engagement, which is you moving your character around, that just gives you that much more of an attachment to it, I suppose, rather than just running it in the background and checking on it once in a while. It's just whatever they're doing, it's just like a weird formula that, you know, it very easily just hooks into your brain. Just that little bit of sort of that little bit of control goes a long way.
Certainly. And yeah, still in early access, so it sounds like there's still, you know, room for improvement and for more features along the way, which is pretty exciting.
And I think something about knowing that the engagement is slight, and you think you can get away with just playing it for like 5 or 10 minutes, you know you don't have to get too invested in it. But that's how they get you, I suppose.
So you mentioned there's some Dynasty Warriors elements to Vampire Survivors, which brings us quite nicely into this next game, one that's based on the Dynasty Warriors formula, but it's one of the spin-offs, and that is Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes. And this is one that I'm currently knee-deep, or actually probably more accurately, neck deep into this game, and one that I've really been enjoying seeing a continuation of the Fire Emblem Three Houses sort of universe, cast of characters and setting, the Fodlan setting, into the Warriors, the Dynasty Warriors gameplay, where there's the hack and slash, there's the base capturing, and plenty of submissions along the way as well. And it's not the first Warriors game for Fire Emblem as well, because there was a Fire Emblem Warriors game back in, I think it was 2017, 2018, and we've had a couple of Zelda Warriors games as well. Emily, I know this one, Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes, is one that you've really got behind as well. So what do you like about this particular game, and what really does it for you?
So I was a huge fan of Three Houses. I had never picked up a Fire Emblem game prior, and then I just picked it up one day and I played way too many hours of it and did way too many replays. And so I was super excited to get back into the world of Fodlan, because I absolutely loved the cast of characters. They did a fantastic job, I thought, with the story. I was a bit skeptical initially, because I much prefer that kind of, I guess, more methodical in my mind, turn-based combat that came with Three Houses, and then going into a Warriors type game where, you know, you're hacking and slashing at waves and waves of enemies and doing all these ridiculous combos and spinning people into the air and smashing them down. It was quite foreign to me, I guess, and I wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it. But I would say probably maybe 5 hours in, after sort of grumbling about it for a little bit, I was like, huh, this is actually really, really fun. I don't know. There's just kind of a simple joy in being able to cut down slates of like hundreds of enemies at once that I haven't really experienced in a game before personally, because I've just always steered away. And it was also really great to see the characters revisited in a different light. So there was sort of these different facets to them that you'd maybe not been able to see in Three Houses that suddenly were brought to the forefront, and these kind of loose ends that were getting tied up, but then all of these twists and turns. So it didn't just feel like you were playing the same game from a few years back, but with a different protagonist. So I did really like that, and I liked what they did with the storyline as a whole. And I, of course, liked that they still had the relationship building and all the kind of good stuff from Fire Emblem that I've come to know and love since. But, yeah, I think just the way that they went about the combat was really fantastic. You know, there was the kind of planning to make sure that, you know, you had an advantage over a particular enemy, and some enemies would sort of outclass yours if you had like a unit that wasn't particularly proficient in a certain weapon or didn't have a certain class. And then there was the pair-ups, there was the combat arts. There was just a lot of different mechanics going into it to make it much more complex than a good old button mash fest. Although if you do want to do that, there is more than enough space for it. So it's kind of good for both. But yeah, so I think it's really fantastic. I mean, the sales numbers are speaking for itself. It's sold a heap. I don't know off the top of my head how much, but I know it's been doing really, really well as far as sales and getting critical acclaim. And that's really, really good to see, because I think they've done a great job just creating a game that's old but new again. So yeah.
I totally agree. I'm towards the end of my first playthrough, going through the Black Eagles side of the campaign. And it's very interesting with three hopes, much like Three Houses, is that there is such variation between which house or which sort of part of Fodlan you, ally yourself with, because, I am a self-confessed simp for Edelgard.
So I will
follow Edelgard to the ends of the earth and Black Eagles for life, to which my partner, on the other hand, is a big fan of the Disney prince, Dimitri of the Blue Lions. A few head shakes there, which I approve of. But just the sheer variety in terms of, I was describing the outcome of a particular quest or a particular mission to my partner and saying, hey, this is what happened. There was something very drastic that happened to this particular group of characters, and the equivalent chapter for the Blue Lions. She said, oh, well, hang on. This happened at this particular moment. And just hearing the sheer divergence of the story and the replayability is quite phenomenal. It's probably the sort of thing, because of how big and long the game is, I'm not going to rush immediately into another playthrough after finishing my first playthrough, but it speaks to the same level of appeal that Three Houses had when it launched, was this very strong focus on characters and relationships and story, attracting people who may not have previously tried or enjoyed strategy games or tactical games, which I think is really, really cool. So, and of course, very pleasing that you're also a fellow Black Eagle, Emily.
Yes.
Was anything that attracted you to the house in particular, or?
Look, I won't lie, I'm also just a massive simp for Edelgard. That's why I initially picked it in Three Houses, and then I decided, for the sake of science, we'll call it, I would try the Black Eagles again for Three Hopes so I could compare the pair. But yeah, I think it's the best house personally, but that's just me.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more
and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I have to say, it's really impressive that Omega Force has been able to sort of start, because they made about 15 of these Dynasty Warriors Stars games that were all, literally all the same. But now that they're working with other licenses and franchises, it's really admirable to sort of see how they've managed to incorporate stuff that made those, the stuff that made those games special into a Warrior style game. Like the Persona one they did last year was fantastic because they introduced so many different things into the actual combat as well as the social stuff. And they've done the same thing again here. And just to hear that, you know, there are three, four, you know, different paths and all that kind of stuff and all the considerations you have to do in battle and the whole strategy element to it is just, I don't know. It's really great. And as you said, you know, it really is good for people who maybe don't have the patience for a turn-based strategy game to sort of experience what the great elements of, sort of Three Houses in a different kind of way, a more palatable way, I suppose, for action fans.
I think as well, one thing that really stood out to me was the fact that as opposed to Three Houses, but also just like a lot of other games, the decision-making was often made or if fully made in combat. So if you kind of made a wrong move, that was going to completely shift the story and, you know, who might live or die. And I thought that was a lot more realistic than maybe sitting there agonizing over a single dialogue selection. So I thought that was really great to see.
That's a really great point because that immediately brings to mind one mission that I played through where I actually didn't realize, I was only told this afterwards, that I had the chance to recruit a particular character. Mm-hmm. However, it did not explicitly communicate that to me in the moment. So as you mentioned, Emily, it's a great example of gameplay affecting narrative and vice versa, which is something I just love in video games. And the fact that it's made me think back on my actions and think, oh no, I've done something really bad there and I had no idea, which is, you know, more like life. You're not presented with sort of binary choices in life. Okay, yeah, pick A or pick B and this is what will happen. No, I had to just forge on unknowingly and live with the consequences. But a game that is far less dramatic, far less combative, for lack of a better word, but still quite challenging, is one that I've really enjoyed that's released via Netflix, of all people, and that is Poinpi. Ed, I know you've been raving about Poinpi, and it was actually your recommendation that inspired me to check it out. So I've lost a fair few hours and had far longer bathroom breaks than initially intended, thanks to Poinpi. So what is Poinpi, Ed, and why is it so good?
So Poinpi, as you said, it comes from Netflix. It's sort of their, I think it's their first feather in the cap for their game strategy. It's like the first like must play mobile game that they have that you can only get on Netflix. So a few years ago, there was a game called Downwell made by a solo Japanese indie developer named Ojimo Fudamoto. I think that's his name, probably wrong, but he made this great game called Downwell, which was where you basically had a guy, he had guns on his feet and he was falling down in a bottomless pit. And that game was all about establishing flow by sort of staying in the air, jumping off of enemies, and avoiding platforms and basically just, yeah, never touching the ground, which is, I guess, very difficult because gravity is harsh. And, but being able to do it was just a really, really great action loop that made you like, got your heart racing. So that released a few years ago. He went quiet. He went to work for Nintendo for a little while, I believe. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, Poinpi comes out. It's by him and it's basically the reverse of Downwell. It's a game where you play a little dinosaur with a juice maker and you need to collect fruit and feed it to a cat. But the actions involve you basically trying to get upward momentum. So that's, launching yourself in a,
sort of like a video game golf style fashion by pulling back on the screen and letting go and flinging point B into walls, off of enemies, ricocheting off, objects and then, slamming down into enemies to get extra bounce, and collecting fruit on the way to, eventually feed the cat. So once you touch the ground, all of the fruit you've collected will go into this cat. So again, it's all about maintaining that flow, keeping off the ground, pulling off these impossible combos or seemingly impossible combos to sort of, up your multiplier and sort of I guess just fighting gravity. It's thrilling and it's a very addictive game. I don't like to use the word addictive, but it's very Moorish. I'll say that. And it's just adorable. Something about Point B's squishy animations, the way he flips and bounces. When you squish enemies, they like squash into like little Play-Doh things. It's just a great game all around. It's perfect for, I think it's like a perfect mobile game. You can play it, one-handed. It's in portrait mode and it's just a really, really nice sort of, almost tactile feedback. I don't recall any vibrations, but it just feels really good to just fling Point B off the walls and sort of keep up those chains. It's just a great mobile action game and definitely one of my favorites for sure.
That it is, and it's actually inspired me to rectify one of my gaming sins in that I have not actually played down well, so I will definitely be rectifying that considering how much I have enjoyed Point B. So I'll definitely be getting to that and, very keen to see how the two compare. Another game I'd like to very quickly touch on and, Emily, I know this is one that you mentioned as one that you've really enjoyed or really enjoyed playing through, and that's The Quarry. So, from the same people that made Until Dawn, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, yes. So very much in that same cinematic story, decision-based narrative game. What do you like about The Quarry and why is this a highlight for you so far?
So The Quarry just does a really fantastic job of, I guess, harking back to those kind of 80s slasher summer camp classics. So I am a big baby with horror movies generally, but I've been trying to dip my toe in here and there. And same goes for horror games. And I was really, really drawn to that kind of where it's basically just an interactive movie almost in a lot of ways. So I really liked that kind of concept when I was going in. And the game itself has just so many different sort of decisions that you need to make that all impact the ending and whether characters live or die. And I think just the sheer amount of like replayability due to the fact that there's just almost not infinite, but a very large amount of different ways the story can go based off even the most minor interactions. I think that's fantastic. And they're not even quick time events. It might just be like an incidental conversation that you'd have with another character could spell death for them in the end. So I thought that was really interesting from a kind of story and story mechanic standpoint. I also really liked that once you did finish your first playthrough, you got those death rewinds. So say if there was a character that you got really attached to, you could kind of go back and undo that a little bit. Although from memory, I think if you got the deluxe edition, you had that from the start. So lucky those people, I guess. But yeah, it's just a fantastic game. And I also really liked that you could disable kind of quick time events or button mashes and things like that, because I think it's kind of become, or at least from what I've seen, a staple in a lot of those more story focused horror games where something will grab you from behind and you've got to button mash really quickly to try and get away. And personally, I don't have the quickest reaction time when it comes to things like that. And I usually die or something happens and it can be really, really frustrating. So I liked that there was kind of that customization that you could do to make the game enjoyable for you. And I think a lot of games are kind of going down that route, which is nice to see, being able to tailor your gameplay like that. And I also really liked that there was pretty much just purely the movie mode where you just picked the characters' personalities and I guess how they might make decisions. And then you just got to watch it through and just sit back and relax. I think they did a really, really fantastic job of making just a good old horror story. Like, yeah, it's plain and simple, just a bit of fun, I think.
Yeah, I like the mention of, you know, being able to customize or disable QuickTime events and that sort of thing. And that's becoming more of an accessibility staple as well, to be able to change it either into button holds or remove them altogether, which I think that's, you know, it's great that more developers are implementing more accessibility features like that. Because I remember with some of the conversations I've had with developers in the past, is if you implement an accessibility feature that's intended for, say, a group of people with a particular disability or a particular barrier, more often than not, the gameplay change or the option that you implement benefits far more people than just the target audience. So it's really great for helping people, you know, tailor their own experience, which is fantastic. Just quickly, how many people died on your first playthrough?
A few too many. No further questions. But yes, I rewound as many as I possibly could. So I think I ended up only having two people die. So five initially, probably. I don't know, quite a lot.
It's a brutal game and very, very similar. I'm an absolute wuss when it comes to horror. So I actually had to resort to settling for a let's play to enjoy the quarry, but I still enjoyed the experience I had. But as we wrap up our mid-year Game of the Year discussion, I want to ask each of you what you're looking forward to for the rest of the year, or if there are any games that you haven't played yet that you'd like to and would think you'd think of them as being potential contenders. So, Ed, I'll start with you. Are there any games that you're particularly looking forward to for the rest of the year, or anything that you'd like to catch up on that you think might be in Game of the Year consideration?
So many, Chris. So many.
Yeah.
I guess aside from the sort of the big blockbusters that we know are coming up, like your God of Wars, even your Bayonetta's, that kind of stuff. I'll say that I'm looking forward to Immorality, which is the new game by Sam Barlow. He did Her Story and Telling Lies, and he works with sort of FMV and interactive storytelling, and he does like really interesting sort of, I guess, detective style gameplay. And Immorality is a game where you sort of are watching three old movies and trying to work out the murder of a real woman. Something like that. And it sounds super interesting. And I think that sounds really inventive. I really need to get to playing, this game called Patrick's Parabox. It's like a recursive Sokoban, like box pushing style puzzle game where each box you push goes into another little world. And it's like Inception, but you know, a puzzle game. And apparently like a lot of people who I sort of, whose opinion I respect, I really love this game. So I'm really keen to check it out myself. I've also been meaning to play Citizen Sleeper, which I've heard is very good. That's another narrative adventure. And then I'm also looking forward to Wayward Strand as well, because that looks to be doing some interesting things with sort of narrative. And I love sort of like clockwork style games where everything is happening around you. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. But plenty more too.
Citizen Sleeper's a good one. Before I get to you, Emily, Citizen Sleeper, that's one that I've played maybe an hour or two of, and it's enough to tell me that this is one that I will want to spend a fair bit of time with, the real tabletop approach to storytelling. And I recall reading, David Wildgoose's very interesting analysis of I think it was a talk that the developer gave at Ludonarricon or something like that, about how the gameplay is sort of a bit allegorical for living with a disability or living with a mental illness and that sort of thing, which is something that is very dear to me. And reading about how that sort of feeds into the gameplay was really, really interesting. And the part that I did play of it was very clever at sort of that whole narrative and gameplay, and just a very cool, even though it's a bit of a dystopian world, it's still a very cool world to exist in. So I would recommend for anyone who hasn't checked out Citizen Sleeper to do so. With that being said, Emily, are there any games let me phrase that a bit better. What games are you looking forward to for the rest of the year, and are there any that you're keen to catch up on as well?
So I'm definitely really keen to catch up on Citizen Sleeper as well. Another game that I, or another two games that I haven't played that I know are absolutely fantastic. So I've committed a cardinal sin by not yet playing Elden Ring. So I need to dedicate like hundreds of hours into that, I feel, because I know, obviously, absolutely fantastic. Everyone's singing its praises. I also really want to play Tiny Tina's Wonderland. I love the D&D inspiration, obviously Borderlands. It's just looks like a good bit of fun. And I think when I have the time, I'll definitely be jumping into it. But as far as games that I'm really keen for that are coming out this year, so I guess the most obvious one is God of War Ragnarok. I absolutely adored the first God of War in the Norse kind of, I guess, what would you call it? Installments. So after watching the trailers and watching heaps and heaps of video essays of people just pulling apart every tiny little tidbit of information that they possibly can from it to work out what's going to happen, I think it's going to be really, really cool. And I mean, they did a fantastic job with the first game. So I'm excited to see kind of how it all pans out. And other than that, I'm also really keen to play Stray, which came out today, actually, I think. I read David Wild Goose's review on our website, and
gameshub.com for anyone listening or watching.
But his review made me even more hyped for it than I already was. I'm an absolute sucker for kind of cat games because I'm a cat lady. So it just looked really cute, and I'm keen to give it a playthrough and kind of suss it out because I've played other games where there's kind of been, I guess, post-apocalyptic, but robots have taken over, and I've been really disappointed by, I guess, the loneliness of it. But I really like that it seems like the world is still kind of thriving with the robots that are in the game. So I'm interested to see how they do that. And obviously the mechanics of just being a cat and being a menace and going around this world and working out what's happened. So I think that'll be really cool. And another game that I've sort of started sinking my teeth into, but it's still in early access, and I'm interested to see where it kind of goes from here. It's another vampire game. I feel like this year is the year of the vampire for some games. V Rising. It was one that kind of came to me through word of mouth, and it seems like for a lot of people that I know of that have played it, same deal. It's kind of top down. It's got kind of aspects of MMOs, but then you're also building a base and kind of, I guess, trying to become the best vampire lord that you can in this world. And then there's all these interesting mechanics of kind of avoiding sunlight and having to drink blood and all this really cool stuff. And so far it's been real good fun, and I'm interested to see kind of where they go as it gets a full release. And I hope people hop onto it and get as much fun out of it as I have so far. But yeah.
Mm. Fantastic. Yes, I'm with you on Stray as well. I'm very keen to give that a go, being the cat fella that I am. So very keen to dive in and explore the world as a ginger tabby, which I think is possibly just one of the best protagonists in gaming of all time. But I'm also looking forward to the Nintendo Switch and PC release of Wild Flowers, which is an Aussie-developed game, or sort of Aussie-based, but very much an international collaboration that came out on Apple Arcade earlier in the year, a witchy farming game, which from what I played on Apple Arcade is just wonderful. It's as if Harvest Moon, Story of Seasons, and Stardew Valley combined, but to have sort of more of a cinematic, slightly cinematic story-based approach. So very keen to play that more when it comes out on Switch later in the year. And I would also like to shout out Rogue Legacy 2, which is a wonderful sequel to one of my favorite games of all time, a roguelike platformer that invokes plenty of Metroidvania style gameplay and exploration and just has a very satisfying gameplay loop. So those are games that I have played and are very excited to see more of as the year progresses. But for now, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining me on High Resolution. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to promote or plug or say before we go? Ed, anything that you'd like to say?
Nothing in particular, but you can follow me on Twitter at Edmund Tran, and you can find all my work at gameshub.com.
Emily?
Yeah, nothing in particular either, but you can, yeah, find my work on gameshub.com as well.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for joining me to talk about Games of the Year so far for 2022, and there'll be plenty more to look forward to as the year goes on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.